Today on the Inland Journal podcast, the second of our conversations with the two candidates running for Spokane City Council in the Northwest District. Today, we talk with the incumbent, Karen Stratton, who's running for a second term. We talk about issues she's worked on in her first term, as well as the issues of this campaign, including homelessness, housing, and police accountability. And we'll touch on her personal financial situation, which includes a bankruptcy filing. We start with the issues she thinks are most important to her constituents.
Biggest issues in this campaign for the people in my district are public safety in the neighborhoods, the homelessness issue, and infrastructure, especially in neighborhoods like West Central when people can't drive down their alleys because they're so eroded and the streets are bad. So those are the three. If you look up in North Indian Trail, there's a big district up there that is overdevelopment. So those are the issues that I deal with day to day, but also that I'm hearing when I doorbell.
I've been hearing, especially from the candidates in the Northeast, talking about the streets that aren't paved there. Does Northwest Spokane have a pretty good amount of streets that are not paved?
We do, and we also have a good amount of older streets that are in disrepair, that have the big potholes and the chunks of concrete or pavement that are missing in the streets. So we have a list, and Councilmember Mum and I are going to sit down with our city engineering street department, and we're going to talk about prioritizing some of those really bad areas that we might be able to get some funding to get those fixed on our residential street plan.
So the city has a six-year street plan. Would you want to rework some of those priorities to maybe talk about some of those streets that are not paved or some of those that are in really bad shape?
The 6-year street plan is mainly arterials, and what we're looking at are residential streets and funding funding the repair of those streets and looking at in each district which ones need it the most. I think Northeast has the most unpaved, but we do have some. We had a big one 2 years ago, Falls Avenue going down to Lower Crossing, and I was able to get some funding to have that paved through the CTAB, the Citizens Transportation Advisory Board. They had some funding for me to use because that was dangerous. So we're going to be looking at other streets in the district that might need those kinds of repairs.
There's a lot of complaint, especially as we go into from winter into spring, and
yes,
that stuff starts to break up, the asphalt and all that. Is the city paying enough money? Is the city doing enough on the streets, or is the city just going as hard as it can right now, according to what the amount of money that you've got?
I think they're going as hard as they can. I think it's slow. I think there's a lot of, you've seen the construction work going on the streets. There's so many of those arterials that are being repaired, replaced, upgraded. So I think they're doing the best they can right now, but it definitely is a problem. One of the other pieces of that that we're trying to fit in the residential plan is that if you're going to be doing some work on a residential street, let's look at those sidewalks. And for sidewalks that are crumbling, there's a lot in Northwest Spokane. There's a lot all over. What can we do to blend those two projects and then upgrade the corners with the handicap ramps? So you're seeing a lot of that where there, if somebody's going to go in, if the city's going in to fix up a residential street, they may do some cleanup of the sidewalk and the ramps on the curbs.
So I have a lot of people saying, why are sidewalks so important? Shouldn't we put that money that we're spending for sidewalks on streets instead? What do you think about that?
So sidewalks, if your sidewalk is in disrepair, if you're a homeowner, you're responsible for those sidewalks. The problem is that they're expensive to fix. The other problem is people are falling and getting hurt on these sidewalks that are buckling. I have, right now we're working on a pilot program. I have two senior families up in on Wabash. Their sidewalks in front of their house, they live right across the street from each other, are completely crumbled. The problem is they still live in their homes. They have a good quality of life. They go out. The men still want to do their work in the yard. If they get on the sidewalk, they're falling and they're getting hurt. So I've put together a pilot project with the Head Start to Construction Trades, which is a pre-apprentice training program through the GSC, General, I'll have to think of the name. Anyway, so we're putting together a pilot program where these pre-apprentices that go into this six-week program, they need projects. So what we're doing is I'm working with the instructor, and they're going to try and take those two sidewalks in front of both of the homes and use those two sidewalks as projects for the pre-apprentices. If that is successful, we should be able to do that with apprenticeship programs, with the cement masons, with the plasterers. There's an opportunity there that takes that cost away from the resident, and they don't have to spend that $5,000, $8,000 to repair a sidewalk.
So one of the issues you talked about was homelessness. Where is the city right now? In fact, tonight, as you and I speak on the 30th of September, the council is going to talk again about what are we going to do in terms of shelters and for this winter. Does the city need to do shelters? I mean, there are some candidates who say the city should not be in the short-term shelter business.
I think the city does. I think it's just a basic human right for people that for whatever reason are living on the streets to be safe, to not freeze to death on our streets. I think what we need to understand is, yes, there are 1,300 people homeless in the city of Spokane, I think was the last count. There's a percentage of those people that will always be on the streets, that is who they are, whether it's a mental illness or they're just comfortable, that's it. But there's a whole other population, seniors, that have been living in apartments and the rent goes up and they can't afford to pay that rent and they find themselves homeless. Women in and men in domestic violence situations where they run to just be safe. Kids, teenagers whose parents are not able to parent and or they don't want to be at home. So we have to look at that entire group. I think it's incumbent upon us to provide emergency shelter, to get them off the streets and someplace safe at night. But I don't think we will make a dent in this unless we provide those wraparound services, that we have a partnership with our hospitals, with our higher education institutions. We can use students and medical students to help kind of provide an all-inclusive shelter where people can get help. Because then what you do is once you have given somebody that safe place, then you can look at the social work issue and say, what does this person need to get back? You're going to have people that will go through that process, that will work with a social worker, that will do the steps they need to get back to working and housing. You're going to find some that aren't, but at least that will give us a chance to focus and say, now we know what the issues are and where we need to help people. The other piece of that is affordable housing. We don't have enough places right now for people to be. We have people on the street with housing vouchers, so they have housing. They have a voucher, but there aren't affordable units for that. So it's a big, complicated piece. It's something that I think all of us are losing sleep over. But I think simply to pick people up, to put them in a shelter, to let them sleep on a floor until 7 in the morning and then kick them out, we're not doing any good for anybody because they have nowhere to go. We may as well, if we're doing this, extend it and have a 24/7, a day shelter where they can go, they can get counseling, they can get services.
So some have used the verb enabling when it comes to that. If you're going to put them in a shelter, you're going to give them everything they need, the three squares and all that sort of stuff. You don't view that as enabling.
To me, enabling is, we had a discussion at council about putting sinks and outhouses down under the bridge. So for those that are down there and we're not going to be able to help, that to me is enabling. That to me is making it a little more comfortable. All I'm saying is what we hear is we don't want to see them on the streets. We don't want them sleeping in our parks. We don't want them in our neighborhoods. We don't want them sleeping downtown in front doors of businesses. So what's the plan? And to me, if we're going to spend the money, we've been putting a Band-Aid on this as long as I've been on city council. It's done nothing. We've been warehousing them at House of Charity. We have seen little. We're not even, I don't even know what kind of data is available from that. If we're going to do this, and I think we should, we have to have an organized structure where we can collect the data, we can see who's getting help, we can see what services are working, how many people we're housing, and then look at that percentage of people and that aren't going to do anything, and then say, okay, what do we do with this group? Are these people that we sit down and say, where are you from? We'll send you back to your city, maybe. But I think that we've got to have that handout to people and give people that opportunity to kind of rise up, accept some help, and get themselves moving along.
So about those people who are the ones that you talked about who, you know, they want to live on the street just because they like that freedom, and some of those who are preying on some of the weaker ones. Does the city need to do a better job of policing downtown to make sure that those people are not preying on others, that they're not, you know, shooting up in the middle of the streets and the alleys? Would you agree with that?
I would. I would say that sit and lie is a tricky issue. If there are no shelter beds available, then we cannot arrest people. They can be cited and sent to community court. And I think community court has been successful in providing those resources and at least introducing people to what's out there for them and what services they might benefit from, especially veterans. So that's a tricky thing. I remember last year, sit and lie was in play. We couldn't arrest anybody. The minute we had enough beds, the police were down under that Brown Street viaduct, which is horrible. And they arrested 8 people. They went to jail. They cleaned up the viaduct. The problem is they're out of jail, 24 hours later, unless they have warrants and all of that. So it's a sticky situation. But I do think that if we have the beds, if we have the resources, and we still have people that are choosing to camp in parks and sleep on the streets, then they do need to be picked up, either go through the criminal community court, arrested. Police officers now are riding around with social workers, so that's another attempt at social workers to kind of get a handle on who these people are and if you can get to them or not. But I think that for right now, that's what we have. We will have, I think it's 6 mental health beds in 2020 that will be available for those officers to make that decision. Is this person a criminal or is this person mentally ill? And can I take this person to the county mental health facility, those 6 beds for treatment, and see what we can do there?
We're talking with Karen Stratton, who's running for re-election to the Spokane City Council in the Northwest District. So what are the realistic expectations in this? I mean, people say we need to solve homelessness as if every city in the country who's tried to do the same thing has tried the same goal, the same aim, and it just isn't that easy, as you're talking
right
about. So what is a realistic marker of progress in this case?
I think a realistic marker is that we are making sure that our neighborhoods are safe, and that, I mean, I get calls all the time in the winter from folks that we have people sleeping in Audubon Park. That's a huge deal for neighborhoods. Not only, and I think they worry more, they want to do something, they want to help, or they're just mad. So I think realistically, if we can get a central area that the city, the county, the valley, the hospitals, I mean, this is going to take partnerships. And I don't think we've done a very good job of establishing those partnerships and sitting down around a table and saying, this is our community. We have so many resources and we've got to pull them together and sit down and figure out a way to provide these services to at least minimize that number. I know just being at Hope House, being at Camp Hope last year outside City Hall, there were seniors, there were senior citizens down there, and all they needed was somebody to sit down with them and help them along a path to find another affordable apartment. So I think reasonably we can expect, if we can form those partnerships, if we can all get on the same page and at least get those that, I don't want to say are easy fixes, but are realistic, that we can realistically take the seniors or domestic violence or some of those other folks and get them moving in the right direction. I think it's a move.
The mayor has talked about needing to get the other cities around Spokane mm-hmm. to be able to take a bigger role in taking care of the homeless within their boundaries. Do you agree with that?
I do. And I think, you know, that's why it was disappointing when they were looking at the shelter, the 24/7 shelter on Sprague. Although we were getting a lot of kickback, I was, from the neighbors, and I was out there talking to folks, that made sense to a lot of people, that we would have the valley involved, the county, and we would all kind of work this together. And I still am not sure, as a city council member, I've not been told, or I don't know why that deal fell apart. But I was hopeful that that would be something that could be a joint venture that people could get the community involved in, both communities.
So let's talk about permanent housing, and that in terms of building more housing. Do you believe that the county's urban growth boundary needs to be extended a little bit in order to create more land where housing can be built?
I don't think so. I don't think so right now. And what's interesting is I've been doorbelling 5 Mile and Indian Trail. And what I've learned is that people moved up there for a reason. They don't need to be 5 minutes from downtown. I mean, that's really what it is. And I respect that. I get it. The problem that I've seen up there isn't necessarily single family. It's more of the multifamily, the big developments, the big condominiums, the big apartments. And then you have no infrastructure to support it. So then you have North Indian Trail Road, which is one way in and out. So to me, the answer really, before we even look at urban growth boundaries and all of that, we really need to look inside the city. We need to look at our centers and corridors. We need to, especially along transportation lines, all of that, we need to build affordable housing units in those areas where people can live, get on a bus, go to work, eat in their neighborhood, shop in their neighborhood, and keep that in centers and corridors and in the downtown core.
So what kind of housing is most needed, do you think? Is it for the lowest end, the people at the lowest end of the income scale?
I think it's a mix. I really think it's a mix. I think that we can be creative. We have a guy in West Central who has been very successful in the big old homes, restoring them, cleaning them up, and he'll have 5 people. They each have a bedroom, but they share the common space. What a great option for folks. We've got those 5 houses in West Central that we moved from the development that will probably, 3 of those are going to look like that, where they're going to be redone and ready for 4 or 5 people. So you're only paying $350, $400 a month. You could have situations like that. You could have just a lower income, the micro apartments. You could do little cottages. So, I mean, I think that we should have a selection of what's available.
And so what more does the city need to do to be able to make sure that, 1, you're giving enough incentives to developers, and 2, making it easy for them to do that?
Well, I think the incentives are the big thing. And I think we, you know, we passed that ordinance with the surplus land. Looking at that, we still get calls from people saying, hey, we're willing to build something. Can we look at that? So we're kind of knee deep in that right
now. The city's surplus land and selling it off.
Right. And in neighborhoods, these older neighborhoods like West Central, you know, really getting creative and looking at those big old homes and developers or landlords that want to come in and buy them and fix them up and offer kind of that alternative to one whole apartment.
Council President Ben Stuckert mm-hmm. has floated the idea of a housing trust fund, which I see as sort of a big pot of money that people can borrow against or get a grant from in order to. Do you support something like that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think it's been on the table since the mayor set up his, I remember that discussion when the mayor set up his housing task force. So I think they're making some headway on it. I think it's anything that we can look at that might be an option that makes it more affordable, easier, more creative, out of the box, I'm absolutely willing to look at.
Let's spend a few minutes about police accountability. Are you satisfied with the ombudsman system that is going on in Spokane? Is it providing enough of a check on police department activity?
I am concerned that I worry about the relationship between the police guild and the ombudsman's office. The people of Spokane are using and utilizing the ombudsman's office. I think we need it. I think we need that voice. But I think he's hit some barriers in trying to get information and communication, attending meetings. And I'm not sure what the answer is for that, but I am concerned.
Does the council have any more of a role then in opening that up, maybe kind of pushing the two sides towards some sort of resolution?
Councilmember Beggs has, for probably the last 2 years, been working on changes to the ordinance, the ombudsman ordinance. I don't know where he's at with that, but that has been a big challenge, trying to get all those parties around the table to talk about what's appropriate, what isn't, what citizens expect, and what the police department considers internal affairs and you know, a select group of people only involved. So I don't know where he's at with that, but I think council may have to step in and at least kind of reconfigure some of that to make it more of a citizen's oversight.
Do you support police officers wearing body cams?
I do. I think that, yes.
You think it's helped accountability?
It's nice to know that they have the body cameras and they're on and people can get that record. I do worry when a city council, when there's an IA investigation and there's a body camera footage that city council cannot see unless we sign a confidentiality agreement. That concerns me. So there was body camera that we wanted to see, we asked about. It's been in the news, and we were not able to see it unless we signed that, and we chose not to sign it and not to see it. That concerns me.
Hmm. Let's spend a few minutes just talking about your personal financial situation. You've been very open about the fact that you and your husband have filed for bankruptcy and your foray into the marijuana business. How do you think the public reads these stories about it and sees, okay, you're having problems in your personal financial situation? How does that affect your ability to be a city council member and, you know, do financial sorts of things that you have to do as a city council member?
I think it first, as I said earlier, I wouldn't wish this on anybody. It's a very, very difficult thing to go through. I will say the bankruptcy itself was a business bankruptcy. So it didn't have anything to do with the $1 million on a Visa account or whatever people think. That however people think that happens. I think going through it, I have had many, many people come up to me saying, hey, hang in there, we've gone through the same thing. So I think it almost brings you to a place where people look at you like she gets it. You know, she's just like any one of us. And I've heard it said before, we're all within, you know, a couple dollars of a bankruptcy. Personally, our finances are fine. We were able to save our house. That's why you get into bankruptcy, is to save that asset. That's what we wanted to make sure that we had. And we're going through the process. So I've been very willing and open to talk about it. We went right to the press when we had to file because I wanted citizens to know about it. But I do think there's a piece there that people look at you and think that there's a human. That's a hard human thing to go through. And so I think it kind of brings out the fact that we're all in this together and we all suffer different challenges in life. And I was willing to stand up and talk about this one, and I'm still willing to. But it I don't think it has any direct issue with my being a city council member.
It's not a distraction to nope. keep you from doing your job?
Nope.
What about that perception if you can't do your own personal things, how could we trust you to do this, the city's business then?
Well, I mean, I'm still doing my own personal finances. We're still, my husband's still working. I'm working. We're paying bills. We're making our house payment. So that's that. But when you have a small business, and if you talk to a lot of small businesses, which people have reached out, my husband was a sole person in his business, and he did every case from the beginning to the end. And, you know, there are challenges with that. And he happened to have a big, big challenge, and we ended up here. But it hasn't stopped us. We're picking up where we left off. We're dealing with the embarrassment and the humiliation of it. But we've learned lessons, and I've realized that, you know, we're going to survive it, and we'll get through it one way or the other. But as far as a budget, the city budget, and what I look for, and how the city's spending money, I stay on top of that. So I hope that people are understanding, and those that want to talk about it can always ask me.
Okay. Anything that I missed that you wanted to talk about? Any areas where you're hearing from that I didn't ask you about? Or
no, I think the homeless, I think it's unfortunate that the homeless issue has become such a fodder for these campaigns. I think we all need to just put our heads down and do what we need to do and start being honest and looking at that issue for what it is. And it's a big issue. It's complicated. And the city has to do something. If we don't do something soon, people are going to move. They're not going to want to put a business downtown. So we're all involved in this. And I don't think it's any one person's fault. I think we all need to sit down and find that happy spot where we can take care of immediate needs of people, provide some resources, and move on from there.
Karen Stratton is running for re-election to the Spokane City Council in the Northwest District. She's challenged by Andy Rathbun, from whom we heard on Thursday. All but the council president's candidate interviews are available for listening anytime on the Spokane Public Radio website, and those last two will be posted this weekend. You can click on the Regional News tab and then on Election 2019, or go to the Inland Journal page, or you can get them by subscribing to the Inland Journal podcast in Apple Podcasts, NPR One, or Google Play. Send your comments and story ideas to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Doug Nadvornik.